Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special Thanksgiving episode, episode 79 of season 10 of Move for a Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, hopefully, he's officially satiated from his overstuffed turkey today. Or still just dreaming and having his mouth water about his turkey that he's going to be having in a few hours is Jim O'Kane of the upcoming Captain America Minute, which we are counting down just another 4 days and it'll be here. So welcome
Yes.
Welcome back to the show, Jim.
Well, I'm just having a second piece of pumpkin pie here, but thanks for having me back on, Rob. This is a nice relaxing day, and good to talk about movies on a great holiday.
Yeah, of course, especially something like Pelham 123, where you can just look at Garber's tie and it makes you think of mustard.
Yeah. He's in fall colors. He's very, very autumnal.
Yeah. See, I remember days when people used to dress like this.
Yes.
It's funny, because when you look at it now, when you look at it from today's perspective, you just say to yourself, this is completely outrageous. But, I know growing up in the 70s and having seen many, many pictures of how my parents dressed me and how they dressed, the way that everyone's dressed here in the movie just doesn't bat an eye.
Well, I, as a man who wears mostly plaid, I'm wearing plaid right now. As a matter of fact, I am envious of Matthau's shirt. I don't think I'd go with a yellow tie, but I could see myself easily in an L.L. Bean shirt like the one he's got on. It looks very comfortable, very warm, just kind of relaxed. It's funny how everybody in this is. It's not casual Friday, but it's kind of like frumpy Thursday. Everybody, I mean, Dick O'Neill has that half a sweater that's, three buttons down, and it's impressive. I have to pause.
Dick O'Neill, but that's the type of thing I could have remembered my grandfather wearing, that type of sweater vest type of thing.
Yeah. It's something that it instantly signifies grandpa.
Yeah,
nothing says grandpa like a half undone sweater. I'm still trying to figure out Dick O'Neill's sweater. It's sort of, does it zip up and he just only zipped it to his mid solar plexus?
I don't know. It looks like hard to. Is it buttons or is it a zipper?
Or buttons? Yeah. Going on later in the minute, he does have buttons, but they seem to be spaced widely apart.
Yeah, and I also love the collar. On the shirt.
Yeah, the collar seemed to reach down under his armpits almost. It's just
exactly.
It's wild, and the Prisne glasses really just sell the whole grandpa look. Wilford Brimley could have taken this role on.
I'm still shocked at how young Wilford Brimley was. In all the movies that he.
Oh, in Cocoon. Yeah.
In Cocoon, he was yes. Under 50. He was like in his 40s. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I have fillings older than him. Yeah, it's
exactly.
Wow.
How old was Dick O'Neill at this point? Dick O'Neill was 46.
Oh my gosh!
He was born in 28. If he was born in 28 and this is 74, yeah, he was 40. He was 46. What the hell?
46. How old was Matthau?
He does not look 46.
It
goes back to what we talked about in It's a Wonderful Life, that everyone just looks a hell of a lot older in older movies. Matthau was 54. Matthau was born in
20. Okay, he looks 50. Yeah. Yeah, he looks 54.
Yeah. And
except for his ears. His ears look like a 70-year-old man. The lobes and everything. Just
yeah, but that's big. The way they always have looked. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Walter Matthau look, and Jerry Stiller was 44 when this movie came out.
Wow.
Hector so that's Elizondo like probably was a lot younger. Hector Elizondo was 38 when he made it.
Wow. Wow. How about Balsam?
Balsam was older. I believe Balsam was probably in the 60s, but let's see. Balsam, Balsam's just 1 year older than Matthau, so he was 55 when he made this. And Shaw is younger than them. Shaw's 47 when this movie came out.
Yeah, and this was the last 5 years of his life too.
That's right.
We lost him in 79, I believe.
78. 78.
So 78, 78. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's not the years, it's the miles.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you, John McClane. No, sorry.
Yeah.
Not John McClane. Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones, yeah.
This is from Raiders. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, even Danny Boyle, he's not in these minutes, but James Broderick was 47 at the time.
Wow. I am just noticing as I'm scrolling through here, there is kind of a Christmassy theme to the one of the posters that says "Who needs mistletoe?" Johnny Walker Red ad. So it definitely is. I would think it would be sometime before the new year. So like you said, it could be around Thanksgiving, but
well, it could be that it's February and they just didn't take down the poster.
And they just I don't know how the how frequent the or how topical the posters were in subways back then.
Right. I think it was in Die Hard with a Vengeance. We saw like a poster that was up that must have been up for a long time, you know, because it didn't make any sense for the timing of the movie at the time. But you know, that's one of the things that you can't know for sure. I thought you were going to say that this movie has a Christmas feeling to it because of all the green and red lights that they that they used throughout.
Well, I just keep wondering how much is a Philip Morris company. I mean, we were talking about Lark cigarettes, but I noticed the other some of the other posters in this particular minute. We're seeing there's a Virginia Slims ad, cool. And there's also an ad for Cool.
Yeah, cool.
I guess the Double Mint Gum Wrigley Company is involved. I just was wondering how much of that is product placement or how much of that just happenstance of, you know, here's a Subway car that we have and none of the advertisers decided on being
I seem
part
to
of the movie.
Lean towards the latter, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I don't remember such blatant product. I can't recall any blatant product placement in movies until maybe 78 with Superman. How you know?
That's right.
The Cheerios.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was gonna say it's the early 80s, but yeah, it could have been 78. No, that's when they really started with the. I mean, the 80s was fraught with the. With product placement, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, I mean E.T. alone is.
Yeah, well, great. M&M's are still kicking themselves for that one. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
43 years later.
Wow. The but I think you're right. I think this is mostly just happenstance that if anybody had the wherewithal to think, oh, we could get our current ad campaign in there, although the time, you know. Cigarette ads had already been banished from television, but this is another way to get the product in front of the people. So maybe Philip Morris or Laureland had an idea behind it.
Possible. All right. So minute 79 begins with the camera panning down to show us the work that they're doing on the train and ends with Garber responding to Rico. So we ended things yesterday with a lot of noise and Mr. Brown looking down at something and not paying attention to what's going on inside the train itself. And then the camera pans down and we see that both Blue and Green are working with a whole bunch of different tools, you know, putting stuff together. We don't really know what exactly they're doing, but it's funny that in this case, Blue is basically the assistant to Green. You know, because throughout the entire movie,
Yeah.
Green is the one who is the fish out of water. And finally, he's reached the point where it's the exact opposite. But, you know, I mean, this guy is a former train, you know, operator.
Motorman. Yeah, he's
motorman. Right.
Yeah,
he's a former
he's
motorman.
Motorman.
So it's not as if you'd think that his type of character would automatically be comfortable and familiar with laying pipes and stuff like that. But, you know, I guess maybe he worked as a plumber part-time or something. I don't know. But it's
yeah, I was just my thought was that he not only was a motorman, but he worked his way out of the shop. Like he worked fixing cars, and then he got out of repair and got into operations because he knew where to hook this stuff up.
Right.
And do you think he designed that?
I do get the impression that he did. I get the impression that this is Green's idea of how to you know, fool the dead man switch. That's what I think. I could be
yeah.
wrong.
Yeah, and it seems overthought. Like I would think that you could do it from inside.
Right.
That somewhere inside the cab, you could just
yeah,
even something like a bungee cord or something.
Yeah, or use a cinder block.
Yeah, exactly. Well, nobody asked me or Mr. Fowler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No idea. And as we see them working on the ground, we hear in the background, we hear Garber's voice saying, Palom 123, calling Palom 123. Come in, please. Palom 123, Palom 123. This is the command center. Come in. And they're just ignoring him. And then Blue says to Green, quick as you can. And then we once again hear Garber say, Palom 123, this is Garber. Come in, please. Come in, please. And then we get a shot on the train itself. And one of the passengers gets up. And I believe that this is the yuppie. But we because of the way that they characterize the characters or all of the hostages, it's hard to really tell who each of them are. There are a few of them we've
yeah.
figured out, but I believe this is the wasp. I think that's who it is.
Yeah,
I don't think he's the wasp. So I think we talked to him like 2 weeks ago a little bit about him. And he gets up and goes, "What the hell's going on out there?" And then Brown just looks at him and goes, who said you could talk? And he stutters along a little bit. And then we hear the children, the two little boys, they start to laugh. And then their mother screams at them and slaps them. And then they start crying.
Yeah.
So, again, it's pretty interesting that, you know, that this is the response that the mother is going to have. You got to give the wasp slash yuppie a little bit of credit, you know, for being a little gutsy by getting up and asking something like this not long after they just shot one of the other hostages. You know,
yeah.
you'd think, okay, keep quiet. These people mean business. They might actually follow through with their threats. I don't know. And then we continue to hear Garber continuing, still trying to get someone's attention, and nobody seems to want to listen to Garber. This time we actually we see Garber from his, we're back in the command center, and we hear him say, Palom 123, come in. Palom 123, why don't you enter? And then he turns to Frank and goes, Frank, how long before the tracks cleared all the way to South Ferry? And we see that Frank is very busy and doesn't really want to go. And he turns to him and goes, you mean before this railroad is so f***ed up, it'll take a computer to put it back together? And he looks at him and says, yes, Frank, that's what I meant. Now, it's a great line, especially, you know, 50 years in the future, looking back, that, you know, you see a guy in the 1970s that wants to have nothing to do with computers. You know, he would be completely
yeah.
lost in our day and age. He's basically saying, you know, you can't do this unless you're doing it, off the top of your head. That's the way to do these things. So, it's
Wow. Yeah. And
I like the line.
yeah, he seems like the kind of a guy that would go to a community college to learn, how to open windows and things like that. Just
Right.
like, I got to learn this stuff for work, but I don't like it.
That's right.
And he's saying this while he's walking around looking at a piece of paper, which is great. I mean, actors always like to have a bit of business, but he gets the most business in this. Well, besides Martin Balsam putting together the pipes, he actually gets a tracking shot where, the only time the camera moves in the entire minute is to follow
That's right.
Dick O'Neill across
Well, that's so we can see that
control
his
center.
sweater has buttons. That's the
Yeah.
idea.
Yeah, that's right. So he's doing a little fashion show for us.
That's right.
But yeah, he actually gets to march around. And it's I can't help but notice the board behind him doesn't light up. And I would think that with everything having a problem, shouldn't all those things on the backboard be lit up like a Christmas tree? I mean, I would think there'd be red lights or everything. Or is it just a drawing of the, I guess it's just a painted
I
on
think it's
drawing
just a
of
drawing.
the stations with no, so there's no information being imparted. It's just dots.
Correct. I mean,
Yeah.
we saw in the control tower that there they do have a little red
Yeah,
and
they have all
blue
those little
light.
light, the little lights. Yeah.
But here there's nothing. I wonder if it's just something that they overlooked and didn't want to spend the budget on, or whether it, like you said, it's just a map. I don't know what a map
Yeah,
really was of then at that point, but yeah.
yeah, and the like the names, I think there's names of stations.
Yes, you can see
Maybe
some
you've
of them.
gone over
You
this in a previous minute.
can see Prospect Park. You can see Jerome Avenue. There's a bunch of them that you can actually see what it says.
Okay, yeah,
White
I
Plains
just don't know
Road
what the
Line.
boxes mean.
Right.
Yeah, the boxes might mean where there are sidings on the station. Besides the stations, there's like exits or something.
Right. It's very possible. Right. And
I don't know IND very
then
well, so.
and then Frank responds to him and goes, about 5 or 6 minutes. I got a snag at the Brooklyn Bridge. And then he turns to one of the guys sitting at one of the stations and goes, start at the top and work down. And then Garber decides he's going to call Rico again. And he goes, Rico, there's something going on down there. And Rico then responds and goes, what do you think? He goes, I don't have the slightest idea. Listen, Rico, I don't care. And then he gets cut off. Now, you're the expert on airplanes, so I need to ask you this question.
I am? Okay.
On airplane? Yes.
Yeah, sure. Well,
You're
okay.
not an expert on the movie Airplane?
Well, the movie Airplane. Sure, go ahead,
I'm talking about the movie Airplane.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, call Hal
Sorry,
Bryan if you
airport.
want airplane
Sorry. Ah,
information.
I meant to say airport. Sorry. Airport. Airport.
Airport. Okay.
Yeah, okay. I've made that mistake in the past. I apologize. Airport. You were the So what is Rico's last name and what is Joe's last name in Airport? And is it the same last name or, is it possible that they're related?
Joe in airport is Joe Petroni.
Okay. And what's Rico's last name?
So, I don't know. Is it Petroni?
It's Rico Petroni. But if
Oh,
you look on
wow.
IMDb,
I was.
Joe's last name ends with an I, and Rico's last name ends with an E. So
They probably had a mix up at Ellis Island, and they're secretly cousins.
maybe, and again,
Yeah,
there, you can make connections
Rico went
between them.
to like yeah, well, like at the end of Fiddler on the Roof, Rico's family went to New York, America, and
We're going to Chicago, America.
Joe's
We'll be
family went to Chicago, America. Yeah.
neighbors.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes.
I was wondering what the there's a Dymo label on Rico's microphone. and we never get close enough to see what it says. I just keep thinking, does it say speak in here or
Well, there's a red label on Garber's.
Oh,
Should there?
I'm sorry. On Garber's, there's a red label. But do we ever get close enough to see what it says?
No.
It ends in TY.
I love the radios because they look to me like everyone here are disc jockeys.
Yeah, they're gonna start crooning.
That's right. That's right.
it
United
looks like
States
something
T1.
that Rick Astley would be.
Yeah, why not? So yeah, no, I don't know what it is, but it does remind me of label makers. That's what it comes down
Yeah.
to. And they're just trying to figure out what's going on. And they're eventually going to find out after the movie's over. Because that's one of the great things
Yeah.
about this movie. They never really find out what it is that they do in the movie itself. We find it. We see something, but we don't exact. We don't. We also. I mean, it's a MacGuffin because we don't really know how the whole thing works. We just know that it is
Yeah.
able to stop the dead man switch. That's it. So.
Yeah, it's a thing to do the thing. So you,
Exactly.
we don't need to know.
Nope.
It's like we
No.
don't need to know like what the dispatcher is sitting in front of the there's the dispatcher that Dick O'Neill is standing in front of the fellow with
And where
the
he says,
mullet
start from
and
the
the
top.
blue stripe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like we don't know what those switches do. It's not. I don't think he'd be throwing. It doesn't look like it's something that you'd throw. You'd throw a switch for the track. So I'm not sure. Does that mean that there's something in that particular block or what? What do those buttons do? We don't know. But
No clue.
it looks like something that if you were in the control room of a subway, you should have a box. Something like that in front of you.
Right. It's true. And that's the way this minute ends. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to this minute?
Yeah, out of focus in the when you're looking at Garber behind the microphone, out of focus in the distance, there is a box of Kleenex, and I am pretty sure back in the 70s that is a box of Kleenex briefly tried to sell oversized Kleenex boxes, and they called it Kleenex for Men, and it had pictures of like Currier and Ive woodcuts of locomotives and steamships, and it was trying to sell. I think someone in their marketing department thought men don't buy enough boxes of Kleenex. Women seem to buy all of our Kleenex boxes, and we've got to appeal more to men. And I'm pretty sure if you look online for the phrase Kleenex for men, you'll see some of these oversized boxes. They're like man-sized Kleenex.
Oh, wow.
And it's just interesting seeing that box out there from the 70s. It was in
Oh,
manly
that's really
colors of
cool.
steel, and so it's and they're and if I remember correctly, they're like super thick. They're almost like wet wipes that aren't wet. They're like 3 or 4 ply tissue. It was like you'd pull out basically a paper handkerchief that you could sneeze into and feel manly about it. And anyway, that was and they were gigantic. They were like tablecloths basically.
Yeah, that's the way it looks.
But that was the 70s for you. They were always trying to find new markets, and that was a thing to have. Man-sized Kleenex. And
Interesting.
they recommend to you keep it in your Corvette, and you keep it in your fishing tackle box.
It's too big for the Corvette.
That's right. You need to have a station wagon to be able to carry it in the cargo section.
Or a forklift, yeah.
Exactly. Just something while when you're finished cutting down lumberjacking trees and things like that. This is the thing you reach for to mop your brow.
Okay.
But it's just interesting seeing it there in the background. I'm like, oh yeah, that was the 70s, man-sized Kleenex.
Oh, wow. Good catch. Good catch. All right. So every Thursday we have a segment that's a game, and it's 70s trivia, 70s movie trivia potpourri. So once again, I'm going to randomly choose a trivia question, and we'll see how much Jim remembers about movies, trivia for movies from the 70s. So let's spin the wheel and see what five questions you're going to get. Obviously, one at a time.
I'm gonna have a turkey leg while you're doing this. There we go.
All right. Okay. What 1977 movie is the movie with the most Oscar nominations of the 70s without any win?
Star Wars?
No.
No.
And it was nominated for 11 different Oscars, and it went home with
11 different.
zero.
Well, it wasn't Annie Hall. It wasn't Ice. Ice. No, Ice Castle's won for best song. I'm trying to remember 1970 movies. King of New York. It was after, let's see, after Jaws. The Deep didn't get anything. Did Black Sunday get anything? That was a 77 movie.
Not 11 Oscar nominations.
No. Scorsese's Sorcerer. Did Sorcerer get nominated for anything?
No. I mean, again, it's not,
No.
this isn't the answer. It was directed by Herbert Ross.
Herbert Ross. Was that Bridge Too Far?
No,
No.
it starred Anne Bancroft and Shirley MacLaine.
Oh, the what should we call it? Was that Ju No, Julia wasn't Julia. It was the Turning Point.
Yes, The Turning Point.
Okay.
It was nominated for Best Picture, two Best Actresses for both Anne Bancroft and Shirley MacLaine, Best Supporting Actor for Mikhail Baryshnikov, Supporting Actress for
And
Leslie
got nothing,
Grunholm,
wow.
Best Director Herbert Ross, Best Original Screenplay Arthur Lorient, Cinematography, Art Direction, Sound, and Film Editing. Didn't win any of them.
Wow.
Nothing. I gotta say, I'm not a big fan of the
Wow,
movie,
yeah.
but still, that 11 with no
Yeah,
win
no.
is pretty sad.
Well, if I remember correctly, they campaigned heavily in Variety. I think they were advertising heavily during that.
And you're saying that's why they didn't win?
I mean, I think that was a surprise. That's why they got nom they got lots of nominations, but nobody voted for it.
Exactly. Okay. All right, let's spin the wheel for the next question. Okay, what 10-year-old actress became the youngest person to ever win an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress?
Was it Aileen Quinn for no wait
No, these are movies
the
from the
one that was in
70s.
Annie
You're thinking, are you thinking of
oh movie from the 70s wait
you're thinking of Anna Paquin.
Yeah hang on
She was 11.
oh
This
that's right
one
yeah
was 10. This is a movie from the 70s.
a
And I
movie
know
from the
that if I, and
70s.
if I know if, if I tell you the name of the movie, you're gonna guess it right away.
Hang on, I'm trying to think of 10-year-olds in the movies from the 70s. Wasn't the good bike it was female.
Yes.
Wow. Wasn't from that
You want me to tell you the movie?
It wasn't from Willy Wonka. Yeah, tell me the movie. There we go.
Paper Moon.
Oh, yeah, Tatum O'Neal.
Exactly.
I should have gotten that. That was, yeah.
All right, let's spin the wheel again and
Wow.
see what the next one is for you. And around and around and around and around. Okay. An ocean liner is struck by a monster wave during a New Year's Eve cruise. What movie is this?
Starring Leslie Nielsen and yes, Poseidon Adventure, of course.
That is
Irwin
really
Allen,
good. You see,
1973, 74.
it's even 1972. It's even further proof that this is completely random that you would get
Yeah.
that.
Never ask me Poseidon questions.
That's right. All right, let's spin the wheel again, and let's see what the next one is going to be. Let's see if it's going to be something that you're going to know really well also.
Jack Albertson starred in this movie with married to Shelley Winters.
Okay, how many James Bond movies came out during the 1970s?
Let me think. 1970, Diamonds Forever. Do you count? No, do you, no, during the 70s, during the
During the
70s.
70s,
Okay.
we're only talking about
During the
movies from
70s.
the 70s.
Diamonds are Forever, Live and Let Die, Spy Who Loved Me. Oh, wow, I'm trying to think now of the 70s. The Roger, it's gonna go with six.
What are the
Should I
six?
name them?
You should try
Oh, the six.
because then you'll know that you're wrong when you try to name them.
Then I'm
So,
wrong, yes. Okay. Diamonds Are Forever is 71. Live and Let Die is 70. Live and Let Die is 73.
Correct.
And then we get back to 73. Is there a 75? There isn't a 75. 77 is
There's a
It's Spy Who
74.
Loved Me.
Okay, but there's a 74 that you
Wait.
skipped over.
There's a 74. Hang on. The one after Live and Let Die. What am I forgetting? In between Spy Who Loved Me and which Man with the Golden Gun. Oh, how
Correct.
could I forget that one?
Okay.
Knick-knack, Tabasco. Yeah. The Man with the Gold Wait, okay. So Diamonds Are Forever, Live and Let Die, Man with the Golden Gun, Spy Who Loved Me, Moonraker, and For Your Eyes Only was 79, right?
For Your Eyes Only was 81.
81. Okay, so
Moonraker
it's the
was
one before
79.
that.
Moonraker was
Moonraker was
79.
79. So there's only five.
That is correct. There's only
Is that
five.
right? Okay.
There's only five. All right, excellent. And now we will spin the wheel for the final one. And let's see what you get on that one. Let's hope it's not an airport question. Okay, what 1973 animated film features a pig named Wilbur and a friendly spider?
Oh dear, Charlotte's Web, one of my grandkids' favorite books to read.
There you
Wow.
go. Okay, nicely done.
I survived.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. You did really well.
But I'm not watching to I'm not watching the turning point to get I saw the 70s and I haven't watched it
Yeah,
since.
you probably should stay away from that one. Yeah. I've seen it once, and that was more than enough for me. I was just shocked when I
Yeah,
saw the movie.
I'm blaming too much turkey today. That's what it was.
Oh, okay. All right. So now we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. So let's spin the wheel and see what Jim gets. And around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay, the original movie came out in 1949, and the remake was in 1998. Okay, and it is, oh, you want to
1998.
start already, guess? Okay. If you want to guess, that would be fine.
1949. Where the Sidewalk Ends? Is it? Oh, wait. Okay.
Do you
Is
want?
it noir?
No.
Not
No.
noir. Okay. Wait, 98. Cat People?
No. Do you want maybe a synopsis?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm just trying to. I was thinking of that. I was honest. Like when you said 49, I'm thinking noir, and then I gotta. Okay. Yeah. Give me a synopsis.
Okay. A young girl who has raised a giant gorilla from its youth decides to bring it to Hollywood to try and make money.
Mighty Joe Young. Mighty Joe Young.
Quick.
Was that 49?
Yes.
Was it? Oh. And they remade it? I didn't know they.
It was remade
I've got to watch newer movies.
apparently. They remade it with Charlize Theron and Bill Paxton in 1998.
Wow. Okay, I got to look that one up because,
It's not very good.
huh?
The remake is not very good, but I
Yeah,
can
I mean,
understand why you would want to check it out.
yeah. I mean, I like Mighty Joe Young. That was a great film. I thought you were going to tell me they remade it as Gorillas in the Mist.
No.
Wow. Okay. I did.
Yeah, no.
Huh. Okay. See, the things I learned from you, Rob, all these movies that I haven't seen yet.
Well, that's my
Wow.
goal, isn't it?
Who thought of remaking that?
I
Was
don't
it
know.
stop motion, or did they have a guy in a suit?
Which one, the original or
Was it like
1998?
Stan Win the then no the new one. I mean the original was stop motion. That was Merriman, wasn't it? I mean that same it's
The remake was directed by Ron Underwood, and I believe it was special effects. Yeah,
Okay, yeah,
I don't think it was a
CGI,
guy in a
so
suit.
no Harryhausen stuff, yeah.
No, no.
Oh well, wow, okay, I will try to watch, and it was 1998.
1990,
So
yes.
okay, I will look that one up, and
Again, I'm not
poor Bill
recommending it.
Paxton, I guess
I'm
he.
just mentioning
No, I know, I understand that.
it.
I'm trying
Watch
to
it and
think of
say,
somebody
"Damn you,
saying
Rob!
what we
You made me
really.
watch it."
Yeah, we need another Mighty Joe Young movie. I mean, that's wow. Well, I guess IP is IP.
That's very true. All right.
Well,
So, Jim, would
okay,
you like
I'm.
to once again tell everyone where they can find Jim O'Kane for the next few days?
Yeah,
Because we know
well.
where we're going to be able to find you from Monday, but up until then, you know.
Yeah, I'm. Well, I'm gonna be taking a nap from all this turkey, and but in the meantime, once you've pushed back from your dinner tables today, if you would please check us out on our on December 1st, be ready because we're gonna be having the premiere of the Captain America Minute, which is going to cover the 2011 Joe Johnston directed feature film, part of the MCU, Captain America: The First Avenger. And that's available at our big website, capminute.com. You can also find it on Spotify or wherever you find Rob's things. We're probably somewhere alongside it. So just search for Captain America Minute Podcast. We are there. Or at the big site, like I said, capminute.com.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Instagram. So, Jim, hopefully you'll be recovered tomorrow from all of your turkey eating today, and that you'll be able to come back for one more episode, even though tomorrow is Black Friday. You know, I know
Black Friday, yeah.
you're gonna be standing at the door of
Right there.
your I know where you're gonna be standing. You're gonna be standing at the door of Klein's in order to try to get
Yeah, S. Klein's, yeah. Just that door busters will be will be there. But first I think I'm gonna go lay down on the couch and just sleep this one off.
Okay,
So
you enjoy that nap. So until tomorrow, achoo.
Gesundheit.